A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com. Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
This episode is sponsored by Try Vegan, a vegan meal home delivery service that is nutritious and delicious and makes your life easier. Based out of New Jersey, they deliver throughout the Northeast. Check out more details on their website, tryveganmealprep.com. And you can get 25% off your first order with the promo code LITYOGA. So go vegan. Good movement, and welcome to Redefining Yoga, a Lit Yoga podcast, which is designed to investigate all aspects of the modern evolution of yoga from my background as a physical therapist and lover of movement. My mission is to help everyone find freedom through safer and smarter movement patterns, so together we can be uplifted, benefiting all beings. Today is Wednesday Q&A. You ask the questions and I answer, but I answer with my dear friend and physical therapist, Lit senior teacher, Kristen Williams. Welcome, Kristen.
Thank you, Laura. Glad to be here as always. So fun.
As always, this is so fun. So let's get started. First question is from Cecilia Bentley Bortoluzzi. Three children, C-sections, want those stomach muscles back in tight. I've never done yoga before. How to start?
I mean, that's a tough one. You know, C-section when they're, that's trauma. I mean, it is what it is. They're cutting through those muscles. But that's not to say it's a death sentence. We see a lot. I mean, it's actually C-section. I don't know what the prevalence of it is by number, but I would argue a lot of our population, you know, that we see in the studio have had one, or, you know, just the trauma of carrying a baby alone. So where to start? I think you start in the reset like we do in class. It is reconnecting to your core, to your pelvis with intention, with manual cues, you know, using your hands to facilitate some sort of biofeedback mechanism to really get that brain to abdominal connection back. And that is tough to do. You got your work cut out for you, for sure. But it's possible, I believe.
I totally believe, and I've seen it. And it is, you know, obviously it's harder with each successive C-section because that is a operation. It's a surgical procedure. Anytime you have anything that's cutting into you, you're cutting through nerves, you're cutting through tissue. And then the repair of that takes a while, just the actual healing of that. But then the return of like that neurofeedback to that area, the awareness, you know, you've had some kind of disruption of communication. And so it takes time. It takes more time, I think, with a surgical procedure because of those extra layers. But for anybody coming out of a pregnancy itself, things have been moved around. Things have been shifted. Gravity's coming at a different, you know, angle, so to speak. So your abdominal wall is going to have to reset. And that's what we do. So it's reestablishing a neutral position, a neutral posture, and then reestablishing those pathways of communication to the muscles. So that's going to be the abdominal wall, but also the pelvic floor. I would say not in the reset that we do on our Lit Daily classes, look at your abdominals, touch the abdominals, like get sensation around the scar, because a lot of times the scar itself can also add another layer of fogginess to that area. So getting the feedback like Kristen was talking about with your hands, with your vision, all of those things help the feedback to that area, because you just want to, I always call it the twilight zone. It's just like this, it almost has it's separate. It's almost like you're not embodied. So really trying to get embodied in your standing posture, in your sitting, and then of course when you start moving. So it's not too late. It's never too late. Start now and start to get clarity there. Okay. Next question is about, this is funny because this is more personal, but I think we could both answer it. Do you have a life motto? This is from Jane Langan Yoga.
Do I have a life motto? You know what? I've definitely, there's probably one thing that sticks out in my brain that I've always lived by. And it was something that my mother taught me. And, you know, being a female, growing up, the only thing, you're the same way. We have brothers. I don't think I understood girls very well until I got, you know, and all of a sudden you get into middle school and it was like, wow. And it's a whole different interaction. And personally, female to female, that I love, like I cherish it now. But one of the things that I learned and I've lived by is, and it's not just a female to female thing. I think it was a middle school thing, period. But was, don't be mad at the person who says something about you. Be mad at the person who tells you what that person said. Because we're all human, right? We're all going to say stuff in frustration about someone else. And you don't ever intend for that person to hear it. You know, it's a human nature. And I hate that about myself, but sometimes I'll do that. I'll say something in frustration. But I've always tried my hardest never to be the bearer of those tidings to the person that it was said about, because those are the hurtful words. So that may not be what she was asking for, but when I think about something that's always stuck with me my whole life, it is, you know, it's that passing along of only good messages, not bad messages, because you're only hurting someone if you let them know something someone else may have said in a natural human way of frustration, anger. Sometimes we vent, and my dearest friends, I think, are the people that I can do that with, who I know it won't go anywhere, or people who don't give me any baggage that I don't need to carry. So that's mine. What's yours?
I think that's beautiful. I love that a lot. Mine, I think I have a few. I don't have like one. One that always stands out to me is, I've talked about this before, I had a poster on my wall growing up, and it was Nadia Comaneci in whatever Olympics that was. You know, she got a 10 on everything, but she was on the horse and she's doing this crazy kind of holding herself up in a V sit, you know, and it's just like so powerful and strong. And underneath it, the quote was, it wasn't her quote. It was, do not pray for an easy life, work to be a better person, essentially. So it's like, don't just hope that things are going to be, that just really stayed with me. And of course, the physicality of it too. And the message of like work, she obviously worked her ass off to get there. She didn't just hope that she was going to be a good gymnast. And I think that, I just saw that. I don't know why I even had that poster, but it just, I feel like it indelibly was imprinted in my spirit that it's not enough just to want something, but you have to really work hard for it. And then of course it feels so much better because you really deserve what you get, as opposed to just sitting around praying for it. And also praying for an easy life is, you know, life isn't going to be easy. So it's like, you have to be strong to handle the ups and downs of it. So that's definitely one. And I think another one is like what you were alluding to is like, you can only be responsible for you at the end of the day. So you can't be responsible for what somebody says about you or how somebody reacts or talks about you or anything, but you can only be responsible for what you put out. And so if that isn't going to be perfect, but as much as possible, can you put out like good stuff, like you're saying? Can you not be that messenger of, you know, like gossip or negativity, but instead really be be responsible for creating a positive, empowering environment. And that's what I have aspired to do in all the different aspects of my life, home life, personal life, professional life. And so those two really are kind of my life mottos for sure.
Well, and I will say to your credit, you are living both of those. I've known you long enough to see that they did impact you because you 100% live up to both of those. So,
well, thank you, honey. Thank you. Oh, sister, I love you. I love that somebody asked us something not physical. Getting back to the physical. L. Bauer 81. Why do I sometimes get a really clunky feeling in my hips when I bring my knee to the chest? That would be hip flexion. Do you want to start with that one?
Yeah, I mean, that's not uncommon. You know, you're bringing your, there's a lot of, when any type of ball and socket joint, the hip and the shoulder, there's a lot of movement there. And so there's a joint capsule, which is basically, if you can imagine, like a sock of ligaments. So that's a little bit loose because, to allow that movement. So as you're coming into flexion, you might be rolling over. One of those ligaments might be a little bit loose, or it could be your tendons that are attaching, you know, the muscle to bone. You know, clunky, I'm guessing that's what you're describing. You could also be feeling some sensation in your SI joint that you're attributing to your hip. There's a lot that happens when you flex the knee into the chest. It's not just in the hip joint. You have some flexion coming on in the lumbar spine. You have some extension in the sacrum or tilting back, which is moving at the SI joint. So there's a lot of areas of movement when you bring your knee into your chest. We become a little bit more worried if there's pain associated with that. You know, then we might wonder, well, what is clunking around? But it's very common. And sometimes it'll click on and off. I know that happens to me. Sometimes all of a sudden it'll start clicking. I'll be like, what the heck? I tighten my glutes a little bit, tighten my abdominals. It no longer happens. So sometimes that can be your body's way of telling you, oop, tighten, you know, time to tighten up. You are allowing a little too much laxity in that joint, and see if that doesn't change that sensation or sound for you. That's my thought. What about you?
I agree with that. I would say, well, first of all, if you're bringing your knee into your chest and you're feeling that, can you back it off a little bit and almost rotate, like kind of like, you know, in and out, and see if maybe it needed almost a better gliding pattern. And if any of that rotation helps the femoral head move. I find that people talk about clunking a lot more the other direction. If they had their leg in, and then they, like, if their leg, say if they're lying on their back and their right leg is straight up in the air and they start to bring it down toward the floor, sometimes they'll even hear a very loud clunk. And that's what I hear about a lot more. Again, that femoral head is probably hitting on and making a lot, you know, some one of the tendons is probably clunking over it, most likely the hip flexor tendon. And so I hear a lot more about that than the clunking of coming way in. Clicking and stuff like that, or just feeling clogged, is pretty common when you're bringing your knee into hip flexion. And like Kristen said, there's so many things that are going on, but I would try and, you know, get your spine as neutral as possible as you begin that. Use your abdominals and see if you bring it in, if you can find a little clearing. If it feels like it's just kind of clogged and clunky, maybe do that rotation. And you can always start by doing some of the stuff we do in our classes where we're hydrating the hip joint a little bit before you start moving it. Just think of it almost as it's a little rusty and it just needs some of that synovial fluid and see if that alone can help. You can also put your fingers right in there and kind of help that action of the femoral head to move deeper posteriorly. And so that would be like, if you were lying on your back, you would put your fingers in your hip, right hip crease, and just kind of drive the top of that femoral, the femur and the femoral head down towards your glute and see if that helps. But like Kristen, if it's not anything associated with pain or discomfort, it's more of a mechanical thing. And so just play around with it.
That's what I would say.
Yeah, I agree.
All right. Nairi Petit Jean says, gait, people's natural, and what should we be looking for? So I know they have to kind of make these very, very short and cryptic. So I guess what she's asking is, what is a natural gait and what should we be looking for to represent that natural gait?
you know, I mean, as a physical therapist, we do tons of gait analysis. And the biggest thing that I'm looking for is symmetry, and then also a smoothness. So I've done things in the past where you've actually used those little stickers, those little, you know, when you have a yard sale and you put the little round sticker, you know, so placing one on each ASIS, one on each PSIS, and so in the frontal hip points, in the back, at the knees, watching what's happening at each joint. So you want to see that reciprocation of the, as the left arm comes forward, the right leg comes forward and vice versa. You know, there should be an arm swing. There should be a slight shift of the pelvis, but not too much. So it's a very, it should be very balanced. It should be very, like, not much translation up and down. So if you start to see too much movement, like I'm thinking heel walkers or a lot of bounce, same thing with running. You know, when we're walking, we've evolved over hundreds of thousands of years to become really efficient. And efficient means there's really minimal movement because it is so symmetrical and balanced. And so when I'm looking at someone's gait, the first thing that will jump out at me is if there is a big asymmetry. You know, when we write, oh, look at that hip. You know, that hip's not working, or that knee is not flexing to come through, or they don't have enough hip extension on one side. It presents as an asymmetry. So I am looking for balance. I'm looking for symmetry. I'm looking for smoothness of motion. I'm looking for minimal rotation, you know, through that lower extremity that we see a lot, that spinning off the big toe, because we're lacking, say, hip extension. So we spin. And it's a fun thing to do. I could sit in a fountain square somewhere and watch people walk all day. I used to work with an elderly gentleman, and that was part of my job, was walking with him. And we would just sit and watch traffic and watch people. It was great. You can really learn a lot about the body simply by observing.
Yeah, I would echo all of those things. And the other thing that speaking of bipedal, one of the big morphological changes that happen when we became bipedal is the development of the lumbar lordosis. And that's really important when you are walking, you're standing on two feet instead of, you know, four, in the form of a quadruped. That helps you balance. However, if it's excessive in either way, so you've got more, that lumbar lordosis increases because you're anteriorly tilted, or it's decreased because you have a flatter back or posteriorly tilted, it really does show up in the gait pattern as well. And you'll see people who have that, usually with their increased lumbar lordosis, there is kind of more, I think, up and down. You know, they're just like, they can't weight shift as gracefully. So there's a lot more kind of push off to go up. That's what I've seen. There can also be a drop in with that knee joint. So instead of just pointing forward, there's much more of that, the lateral hips giving out and the knee drops in. They can shuffle also more because they're not getting the hips to help them in the walking. And you can also see people, like, what is the angle of the foot? Like you were talking about the rotation a little bit that'll happen. The hips can rotate out, and whether they started that way or they develop that as a compensatory strategy. I've seen literally people waddle around because they are lacking hip extension, or they're lacking the muscles of hip extension, like, you know, really strong ones to help not only propel them, but to stabilize in the form of the glutes and the glute medius and maximus. And so there'll be a lot more kind of waddling back and forth because they're almost like toddlers who aren't really using their glutes well. So there's lots of variation. It is really fun to watch. People will excessively swing their arms if they're not using their legs. They'll also not use their arms much at all, and just kind of, but it should, there should, I think, a normal quote, if normal's not, like, natural gait should look natural. It should look graceful. It should look, there should be ease to it. It is essentially propelling yourself through space and kind of holding everything together with, like you said, very little lateral or anterior posterior displacement. So you can look from the ground up, you can look at the pelvis, you can look what the head is doing and the arms. You can look at all the different joints, but ultimately there should be a collaborative light degree of movement so that you can walk well. And again, that's going to be walking efficiently because you're going to be feeling a lot better. When people walk a long distance and they're, or even a long-ish distance and they're sore, a lot of that goes back to probably how they're walking. It might not be very efficient and they're overusing maybe their back. And the back is really just there to help stabilize the torso. It's not made to help propel you forward.
Well, and I think we have to always bring the gait pattern back to what's on your feet too, because there's nothing funnier than watching people in high heels who, you know, I mean, that's a classic example of a high heels can just be an atrocious gait pattern, or, you know, the narrow pointy shoes, what that does all the way up the chain. You know, the best thing you can do is walk barefoot or walk with something that gives you a good open toe box, you know, some mobility. So it is like walking barefoot, but with some, you know, protection on your feet. So I would always bring the gait pattern back to starting at the foot, starting at what's on the feet as well.
Absolutely. Because you can have the best gait pattern and then you put on high heels and it changes. I know, you know, it's been a long time since I put high heels on, but I know when I do, my, you know, how far I step, my step length is so much shorter. I feel like I'm really shuffling. And I'm not working my hips, but I'm really working my hip flexors a lot to help stabilize, because you're kind of pushed forward. So you're that's why you get really sore in your shins and in your calves and in your hip flexors after being on high heels, because it's just not natural. It's not a natural way to locomote around.
No, my gosh, your low back, that anterior tilt you get tossed into. Oh.
The funniest thing I know is, like, when I've worn high heels, I almost like slightly jog next to my husband, because actually running feels much better and normal in high heels than walking, because you're just kind of falling forward because you're right in your push-off stage. Versus walking, you've lost your heel connection. So that's why you're always feeling like you're kind of falling forward, and you've got to shorten your stride. So it just feels like so much, like I'll just sit there and I'll be jog. And he's like, why are you doing that? I'm like, it's easier. I'm going to feel better if I do a little jog next to you than if I try and walk, because I'm going to be 10 steps behind you if I walk. So yeah, I guess the motto there is, you know, definitely look at your footwear and look at your posture and film yourself and see what you look like. Do you look natural when you're walking? Does it look effortful? Does it look sloppy? You also don't want to look like you're just spilling water all over the place if you're carrying water on your head. You know, you just want to feel there's an elegance to it, because there really is in being a bipedal propeller. Well, thank you as always, sister. This was wonderful. Thank you all for your questions. Feel free to write us. Check out KB Kristen on Instagram at KBWilliams99. You can send her a direct message or send it to me at Laura Hyman. And as always, I'm pulling for you.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.